Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back. The Front Page Football Podcast, we are back. It has been a while between drinks. I have not actually looked myself. I think maybe a month ago was the last time we did a podcast on this platform. It's been a while. We've had a bit going on. I've had a bit going on. But also, I've been thinking of ways to basically reformat the podcast. So we are going to be starting a new format today on the podcast. A bit more shorter episodes, a bit more kind of to the point, and going over a few kind of different things, different topics in Australian football every kind of couple of days. Today, I'm just going to, it's just me on the podcast, Christian Marchetti, your usual host, of course. And I'm just going to go through the round that has just gone in the A-League Men, give my thoughts on all the games. I was able to catch pretty much all of them besides Perth and Newcastle because I was at the Adelaide United victory game and then we had the press conferences afterwards and yada, yada, yada. But I was able to catch, even though both games were on at the same time yesterday, with MacArthur and the Mariners and Sydney and Brisbane, I had my split screen going, able to catch a little bit of both there. So yeah, I'm going to just kind of give all my thoughts and what I kind of saw and I guess my kind of putting two and two together of some different things from some different clubs at the moment, different managers, because there's some interesting storylines heading towards the end of the season with the A-League Men as well. Now, for this podcast, before we continue, so the plan is Monday, Wednesday, Friday with these shorter episodes. It's not just going to be me on every episode talking. We're going to have different FPF members obviously coming on where possible as well, probably depending on what we're talking about. And I'm also going to try and get guests from elsewhere, whether it's other people in Australian football media, whether it's players, coaches, whoever it might be. And yeah, basically just 20 to 30 minutes of your day that you can take out and listen to my interesting insights into what is happening in the game in different areas, mainly the A-League, obviously, at the moment. And yeah, without further ado, let's start then with the round that has just gone. So, starting on Friday, the Wanderers and Western United, I was able to catch this one. So Western United go in to CommBank, pretty empty CommBank as well, and they win 3-1. Let's start with the Wanderers because there's been a lot of conversation over the last couple of days I've been seeing with these guys. So let's cut to the chase. I mean, it's basically fucking Groundhog Day in Western Sydney, right? Because let's just get to the point, and we said this. If you go back to a podcast probably a month ago, I think the last one we did, we were talking about Rudin and his rantings and the press conferences he did and all that sort of stuff. And if you go back, you know, we said on it, like, there's no way these guys with the squad that they have should be clinging onto sixth in the league, right? And yet here we are. And now they've got this game coming up tomorrow night, Tuesday night, the time I'm recording this, against Melbourne City. That's just fucking massive, which we're going to get to soon. We'll talk about Melbourne City later. And like the fact that we're now in round, what are we? This is a catch-up game, but kind of 20 rounds in, and these guys are potentially going to be just outside the six. It's honestly crazy to me. I mean, you know, we know the Wanderers with the way they've kind of structured their squad, that they have they haven't gone as big on kind of visa players. I mean, obviously they brought in Sonny Kittel in January, but you know, it's really Marcelo, it's Antonsen, it's Hendricks, and then outside of that, it's a lot of younger guys. But it's a lot of, you know, players that they've brought in, like your Lockie Brooks, like someone like Valentino Yule, who have been in the league before and they've done it with other clubs, and they've tried to kind of, you know, bring them back and see if they can be handy players for them. And most of those signings have actually been good. We could talk about, you know, someone like Yule and you know, Kittel, I just mentioned before, haven't really been effective yet anyway. But I don't understand. You know, I listened to the RBTV boys, the Wanderers fans, on my walk this morning, I was listening to their review of the game just to see what the fan perspective is around the team at the moment. It was interesting. They were saying that they feel this squad isn't good as the one last year, and that's probably true. You know, you look at last year, you had Tommy Mosella and Marcelo in that, you know, and that centre back duo was fantastic. And then you're kind of replacing someone like Marcello, who's experienced, that can give you that consistency week in, week out, with someone like Alex Bonatig, who, as we saw, had a couple of mistakes on Friday, most notably with that third goal scored by Nikita Rukavica. But, I mean, you know, okay, like, you lost Neuhnhoff, but you brought in Jorrit Hendricks, right? You still got Borrello. You still got Milanovic. You brought Lockie Brook in. Like, this team is still fucking great. Like, you know what I mean? And, you know, even some of these young guys, like Aiden Simmons, this is year two. He's gotten better. Badalato, who didn't play on the weekend and has been excellent for me as a young player. And I know, you know, you can look at it and say, well, like, they've got a lot of young players. It's going to be like this. It's going to be erratic. But I just think there's too much experience there. And, you know, with guys like Antonsson, with guys like Marcelo, Antonsson, let me just remind myself, I believe was on the bench on Friday. But, I mean, he's been a pretty decent signing when he's played, in my opinion. And, you know, I just don't understand how anyone can look at that squad and think, like, anything less than, like, third, in my opinion, is a total failure. Which gets to my next point about the coaching of this team. And not so much the coaching from a tactical aspect. I don't really think there was anything too wrong with the way the team was set up on Friday. I know some people say, what the hell is Thomas Biedling doing in midfield? But ordinarily, if Josh Berlanta is available, he's going to play next to Hendricks in that role. So I wouldn't stress out too much about that if I was a Wanderers fan. But, I mean, apart from that, like, Brook on the right is great. He cuts in onto his left. Milanovic has been superb all year on the left. Kittu and Borrello as the two up front. You could say, why is that not Antonsson instead of Kittu? And this leads me to, because if you got Borrello and Antonsson, let's say, instead of Borrello and Kittu, right? So the idea with Borrello and Kittu was, you've got Borrello who can make those four runs in behind, and you've got someone like Kittu who's more creative and can drop deep and link with the two sixes, help them build out from the back, and can also, you know, feed the likes of Brook and Milanovic, which didn't really happen. And often when they built out, they kind of had this 4-2-4 shape, and I didn't really think they had that sort of link player that could help them. And, you know, are you just better off going with Antonsson and Borrello as a front two and just having more goal scoring power in that attack? And the real problem they've got here is, you know, you look at their team as well, and Brook and Milanovic are kind of creative in their own right, but if Kittu isn't going to be that kind of number 10 that can create, and Ninkovic at this point is, you know, 10-15 a game with the way things are going and the way he's been used this season, then they're kind of lacking that creativity from a midfield area as well. But the other point I wanted to make when you look at this team is, not only do you know, and I agree with some of the points, I was listening to RBTV and some of the points they made about, you know, maybe those players who left in the offseason weren't properly replaced, but also, like, this team is really top heavy, like, when you look at it. So you've got, you know, just all these are all their attacking players, right? Kittu, Dylan Piraeus, Antonsson, Ninkovic, Valentino Yule, Milanovic, Lockie Brook, Brandon Borrello, and probably Sapsford and Badalato you can put in there. Badalato could be that creative number 10, but as we said, he's a young player. He's gonna, you know, drift in and out of games. He's gonna be up and down. But my point is, you know, like, if, like, Antonsson's not gonna be accepting being on the bench for too much longer. I mean, the guy's got the number 9 shirt, right? If he's going to start, Kittle's probably going to be like, well, hang on a minute, I'm not going to accept being on the bench either. This is ridiculous. Like, I've joined the club on loan. Like, I've come here to play. And then you say, all right, well, maybe Kittle will play out wide, but then it's like, well, you're not dropping one of Lockie Brook or Nick Milanovic, right? So you just, look at it, it's kind of similar to Melbourne City, who we'll talk about later, where it's just like whenever you try and say, oh, well, this player has to play, it always means another player who also has to play needs to go to the bench. And it just means, well, this is stupid. Like, you've got too many big personalities who all need to play, and that causes problems. And I wonder if that is causing problems, you know, behind the scenes in the dressing room. Who knows? But the other thing with them is kind of how erratic they are in games. Like, to the game itself, because I know I'm just talking generally about the Wanderers and not the game. Like, I thought first half, it was very even. I think Western, the good thing, and we'll talk about Western in a moment, is they kind of, it almost like they turned up with a point of like, we know you're going to, and John Aloisi said it after the game, we know you're going to come and show a reaction from the derby, but we're not losing here again like we did last time, which is obviously that 5-0 from earlier in the season. And they were combative. They threw themselves into everything, every challenge. They were really up for the fight. But they didn't really create much in the first half, neither did the Wanderers. And it was a really dull game. And then it was kind of waiting for that moment from Milanovic that it got, which was just a sensational goal, like absolutely brilliant by Nicholas Milanovic. There was actually a point when he scored and you felt, if they win this 1-0, I'm going to come flying in on this podcast talking about the Milanovic-Rami Nazarin swap deal and how it's probably up there with one of the worst swap deals in A-League history. But then the Wanderers capitulated. And it's not the first time that this has really happened this season, right? Like, you look, and I'm just going through their results now. And the game, I'm trying to think. Yeah, so we had those, the two Root and Rant games, right? So the MacArthur game and then the Jets game. Like, the MacArthur game, obviously MacArthur took the lead in that game. And then the Wanderers scored through Brooker Milanovic, and they were 2-1 up. And then within 4 minutes, they throw the lead. Then they take it again. Then they throw the lead on the stroke of half time. So that one was kind of more of a back and forth type. But then the week later against Newcastle, that 3-3 draw, where they went down to 9 men. I mean, they conceded after 5 minutes. I know they had Taker Harper in goals in that game, and that was his mistake. But Brook scored twice in the first half, and at half time, you're thinking, oh, like, yeah, they're killing him now. They're going to go on and win this. And they just don't. They don't have, and it's kind of similar to Melbourne Victory, actually, who I'll talk about later too. They don't seem to have this killer instinct, which you need to A, be a contender, and you should have when you've got the personnel they have in attacking areas. Like, there's no excuse for that. So it's, and, you know, you always say a team kind of symbolizes their coach. And, you know, Rudin is, you know, he can be very erratic. You know, we've seen that with his dealings with the media this season. And the Wanderers are kind of an erratic team at the moment. They'll have 20 minutes where you go, holy shit, like, this is a really good team at their best. If they play like this come finals, if they make it, of course, then, yeah, they could beat anyone. Then they have 20 minutes where they're, like, they're looking like, you know, an Adelaide United, Newcastle Jets. No disrespect to those teams, but there's no way they should be playing at that level. And look, I've been talking about them for a while, so I'll move on. But the other part of this is that Rudin extension. And I'll just say this. So Rudin signed that, well, that was announced, the contract extension, till the end of 2026-27 on January 11th. Now, that was a day before they beat Melbourne City in Unite rounds. I was there. But that contract was signed, or announced, maybe signed weeks earlier, but in the midst of this, that loss-win, you know, how many games did they go win-loss-win-loss? That was 8-9 games, right, of this inconsistency. And it's kind of like, you know, last year they were good, they fell away, and then they really inexplicably lost in the elimination final to their rivals. You know, if you look at the two seasons Wanderers and Sydney had last year, there was no way they should have lost them at home in the finals. And then now it's like you hand this guy a 3-year extension in the midst of this erratic form, and now you're in a position where you're not sure, like, you might be going backwards. You might not even make the finals. And it's just kind of like, okay, just a very bizarre extension, you know, and now they are in a position where they've won one of their last six. So, yeah, yikes. It's not great. And, I mean, they now go to Melbourne City, then they go to Perth, and then it's a big game against MacArthur. So, City's not going to be easy. They're fighting. It's a massive six-pointer tomorrow night. Go to Perth. No one's finding it easy in Perth at the moment, regardless of how they're going. Perth, of course. So that's not going to be hard. And I mean, even their last three games, they actually have to play City a third time, or the second to last game, 20th of April. Before that's another derby, which is a Sydney home derby. Who knows, that might mean that the Wanderers win it, since every fucking derby seems to be an away win at the moment. And then they finish at Victory. So, honestly, that like, it's the A-League. There are no games that are guaranteed wins, but there really are no games here that are guaranteed wins for the Wanderers, and they're really going to have to dig deep. Okay, we're 15 minutes in, and we're still on game one. So, let's move on. Quickly with West United. Looking really good. Looking really good. I think they've got a chance to definitely not be bottom. I think I'd actually say it now. I don't think they're going to finish bottom this season. I'd be very surprised. And what's interesting with them is the season is kind of panning out very similarly to last year. So, you know, last year, I've actually got it in front of me now, last season that is, round 17, they were bottom. With 16 points, then that 19 by round 18. So they basically won three in a row in that period, and they finished with five wins from their last nine. So they finished really strong. And if you remember, there was like a chance of, oh, can they creep into sixth? They finished seventh. Like, I'm not sure at this stage, but you look at what I would say with Western that's different this season than last season is they do seem like they are way more kind of connected and way more, what's the term? Like, there's not the Leo Lacroix, I don't want to be there, or Prijevic, I don't want to be there. Like, it seems like all the players are buying into what's going on. Just from the outside looking in. I've got no, you know, inside information or anything. And Daniel Peña is the other piece of this where you think he's going to have a big end of the season in terms of goal contributions. Took his goal absolutely superbly on Friday, and then a great ball for Rukavica for the third goal too. And yeah, like, I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's just a coincidence that the two of these seasons, last season and this one, have kind of turned out similarly. I think this season is different where they actually played better, I felt, in the first part of the season without taking their chances. But it might be something they need to look at for next season because, man, if they played performances like Friday, I mean, I had them in my six before the season. If they played the way they did on Friday, particularly that second half, each week, and they'd argue, John Aloisi would argue they have most weeks, but actually being clinical and taking their chances, like, well, you know, we'd be talking about a team which is definitely, you know, in that kind of top four range. So, food for thought for West United for sure. All right. Melbourne City, Wellington, Phoenix. First thing I have to talk about with this game. So first thing, just Melbourne City. Look, great win for them. I agreed with what Rilea Vidmar said after the game. I thought it was probably the most Melbourne City-esque performance that they've had in a while. Like, they looked very much in control. You felt like, you know, at 1-0, like, it was going to be 2-0. It wasn't going to be like they were really clinging on. I know Barbarossa's had a late chance for Wellington as well, but, like, that was much more what we'd expect from the quality that you have, right? And big mistake, I think, from Paulson on the goal, to be honest with you. It's a good ball by Arslan, but Wellington should probably deal with that better, back post cross like that. But really, the biggest story for me coming out of this one was Jamie McLaren. Look, they will defend it like no tomorrow. Like, it wasn't a dropping, you know, it's the rotation official line that they gave. Obviously, look, they do have the game tomorrow against Wanderers. It is a quick turnaround for them. Look, they have a day less rest than the Wanderers, which is something to keep an eye on, because, you know, really, just quickly on the Wanderers, they should have no excuse to come out and show more energy. And City looked absolutely done, by the way, at full time of this game. There were guys on the ground. Like, you could see it was a big effort to you know, you're playing one of the best teams in the competition in Wellington, so it was always going to be like that. But there's a few things here. So I want to say, just on McLaren, right? So we had the reports months ago about, you know, he's not going to sign a new deal, or apparently rejected, you know, contract extension, etc., etc. Then Fahid Ben Kalfala, who's an agent, went on the A-League Off Air podcast, which, by the way, is a great podcast if you haven't listened to it yet. Robbie Thompson, Daniel McBreen do a fantastic job. He went on there and he was talking about Melbourne City, and it was, you know, he kind of did a bit of a long monologue about some of the issues and stuff, and, you know, obviously he represents Tolgay Arslan, and he said, you know, basically there's players in the team who kind of are maybe expecting the world, who think that they're, you know, I've won the championship, or, you know, I've kind of been there and done that, you know, and, you know, I deserve maybe my flowers for that, I guess. It's hard to describe, but he never mentioned McLaren is kind of the point I'm making. He never mentioned him by name. Naboo and kind of Curtis Good came up, and he said, no, those guys, you know, they work hard, etc., etc. My point is, for him to not mention McLaren kind of meant like, okay, so McLaren is one of these guys maybe causing issues behind the scenes and kind of, in his eyes, being selfish, potentially. And you put two and two together, maybe McLaren thinks, look, I've scored all these goals for you, for this club. You know, I deserve maybe a wage hike. I deserve to be, my value needs to be reflected in my contract for what I've given this club in the past. Okay, fair enough. The point I'd make is, if you look at Saturday's game in isolation, McLaren was, okay, wasn't dropped, whatever, but he was out of the team. Max Saputo come in, and like immediately the ball seemed to be moving more. Immediately Caputo's linking with, I don't know, Arslan was back in too. Like, okay, that helps. But like there was more link-up play. They looked more dynamic. Like, I don't know, like to have a nine that can actually link up and be involved is kind of nice, you know? And I'm not saying McLaren, the best version of Jamie McLaren, doesn't do that, but if you are just going to be a poacher and you don't feel you're getting the service, or, you know, there are also some stats which suggest that Jamie McLaren just hasn't taken his chances this year either, it's kind of like, well, what's the point of having you there? It's going to be interesting. He probably comes back in against the Wanderers, and maybe he scores, and maybe he's back on form, and he just needed that game, you know, out of it. But the other thing you have to ask here, you know, always ask why with this stuff, and I think the other thing you have to ask is, why would you rest your best goal scorer against the league's best team, right? And particularly, arguably the league's best defense. I actually haven't looked at the numbers on that. I don't know if Wellington the best defense in terms of goals. Actually, I'll get it up right now. Now equal with the Mariners, both conceded 22. But you know, when Wellington play, everyone watches Wellington. They're absolute menaces in around their box. They defend their box like warriors. To have a player like Jan McLaren against that, who has clever movement in the area, probably gives you an advantage. But you know, you quote rested him, you know, for rotation reasons against him. Like, that just doesn't add up to me. So it kind of leads me to saying, let's see what happens against the Wanderers and stuff, but I'd be shocked if he's there next season. That's my McLaren take. Wellington, no real thoughts, to be honest, on them. I think, really, they just weren't at it in this one. Every team's allowed an off day. And I also, like, particularly when you've been just absolutely exceptional, you know, all season and punching above your weight. Like, I think you're allowed a little bit of leeway, to be honest with you. And they could have easily drawn this game. Like, I mentioned the Barbarossa's chance before, too. And I just want to bring something up. Shout out to my guy, Caden Foley, a writer with us at FPF, attends most of Melbourne City matches. And he was there. And he asked a great question to Giancarlo Italiano after the game, where he kind of asked him, you know, what do you see in the future in terms of your coaching philosophy, and where do you want to take this team? And I just want to mention something that Giancarlo Italiano mentioned post-game. He mentioned Roberto De Zerbi in Brighton, which is popularized as De Zerbi ball. And he mentioned how that kind of 4-2-4, which Brighton play in the Premier League, and that De Zerbi ball sort of system is something that he wants to, well, it's something that he looks at as his desired style of play, right? But he said, like, it's not something you can implement with the players that he has. And I just want to say this with A-League coaching, any coaching at any level, right? but particularly in the A-League. Wellington, the Mariners, we'll talk about the Mariners later. I mean, how can we not? I love the Mariners. Like, the key to success in the A-League for me is understand your personnel and put your personnel in positions where they can succeed. It's really simple. Like, it sounds so simple when I say it like that, but you look at Wellington and it makes sense. Like, it just makes sense, right? I know it didn't work for them on Saturday, but just generally speaking, look at the way they're set up. Look at what they are able to do in and out of possession. And they're able to do it because there are players in positions where they can succeed. Just quickly, Houston Salas, for example, the Costa Rican boy that they've got in. You know, he suits them really well. I can see it already because in transition for Wellington is where they win, right? They have to be good in both elements in transition. Defensive transition, getting back behind the ball. Attacking transition, being able for their midfield three in particular to be able to support, particularly those outside sixes like Giancarlo Italiano mentions. Ben Old's done a brilliant job with this all season. But Salas, watch him whenever Wellington win possession. He flies forward and he's got the engine to do so, right? So that's really important. Understanding personnel, putting it in positions to succeed. Can Wellington mold their squad over time where he could play that kind of 4-2-4 system? Look, that'd be really interesting. I've waxed lyrical, I think, about him before. If I haven't, he's an absolutely outstanding coach to be able to do what he's doing with the personnel that he has. And it's going to be interesting to see how they react to this loss too. I'll say this about them, one last thing. If anyone out there thinks that Wellington finishing second or third or, you know, whatever, and let's say they fall off a little bit, is like a bottle job or something like that, I mean, you're a moron, like just quietly, because like no one expected this from Wellington. I mean, even right now, the Mariners are only top because they've won more games because we use a weird tiebreaker. But like, just get the table up quickly again. Like, they are still 6 points clear of victory in third. If victory make that up and Wellington finish third, I'm not going to call them bottle jobs. Like, no. You know what I mean? They've been superb. Absolutely superb all season, regardless of what happens from here on out. And I'm just really interested to see how they look in a finals game, you know? And particularly if they play at home, and if that's going to be at Westpac. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see. Is it still called Westpac? What is it? But Sky Stadium. I don't know why I said Westpac. I think it's called Westpac for many years. To see how they go, you know, when it is kind of, it's maybe an elimination final. Let's say if they finish third and play the team in six, it's nil all. There's 20 minutes to go in front of their home supporters. That's where we're going to see what they're really made of come finals time. But look, they've been exceptional all season. All right, I'm going to actually take a quick break. And then when I come back, I've got Adelaide Victory, Perth Newcastle, and then two games from yesterday. Okay, we're back. So, Adelaide United, Melbourne Victory, the original rivalry. Let's talk about that a little bit. A lot of thoughts on Adelaide United. So, let's go before the game with Carl Witt's pre-match press conferences, which are usually extremely dull and there's not really anything to gain from them. But he did say this. He said one thing in there which I thought was interesting. He basically said that, that the club didn't expect to give this many minutes to young players during the season. Excuse me, I've got a bit of indigestion. Anyway, so that he said that before the game, which ties into kind of what we've been saying about them all season, where the squad's completely imbalanced when it comes to age profiles, the experience. Players have not turned up consistently and didn't again on Saturday, and relying on young players to essentially carry you through, you know, on the proviso that they're going to play at their best every week. It's just never going to happen in football. It's very simple. For him to mention that before the game though was really interesting, because he's kind of almost suggesting that, you know, they are. Maybe him and the other management at the club are not happy with the, you know, the investment from the owners. And maybe they would prefer the squad construction to include more experience. You know, it's pretty obvious that they need that they need players. You know, you don't have to be rocket science to work that out. But you know, to the game itself, like another passive sort of going through the motions performance from Adelaide, right? And the whole aura, you know, because I was there on Saturday, the whole aura of Cooper's was just very sort of like, look, this is over this season. Let's just get through these games. Wait to the off season, you know, and you know, retool the squad from there and go again. Like, you know, people come out and say, oh, mathematically, you know, look, the Adelaide season's over, right? You know, at this point, they're looking behind them, making sure they're not getting the wooden spoon, right? So, and then post-match, like, being in that room with Carl Viet, and you could just see, like, it was kind of, look, let's just get through the press conference. But there were a couple of lines in there, and just his whole demeanor was just very much, you know, I'm sick of this shit, you know what I mean? And not so much just sick of this shit in terms of the players, but, you know, I've been feeling this for a while where it's kind of like, and everyone, you know, gets on Carl about, you know, his tactics and, you know, you're not using the players right and stuff, and other managers maybe could have got this team to be competitive for finals. You know, look, okay, fair enough, you make those arguments, but I'm just saying, like, you know, if you're coming from, well, someone like Carl, who you know, he played in successful teams at Adelaide too, and obviously Adelaide City in the past in the NSL and stuff, but, you know, he knows the value of experience, right? And he knows he's worked with young players a lot, but he would have to know that from his time, you know, the FSA working for 7 years with young players too, that they're going to have ups and downs. He knows that there's no way that you can just go through a whole season relying on young players to win you games, right? So no one's going to get me to believe that he can be happy, right, with this situation, with basically the club just, you know, seemingly pocketing money for themselves and not reinvesting it into players that could actually help them now, you know. If you asked him off the record if he was delighted that they let Craig Goodwin go, would he be happy? No chance, right? Like, it's, you know, and literally just keeping that one player could have solved a lot of these issues. There's that too. But that's in the past, and we're talking about the present. And, you know, he put some nuggets in the press conference afterwards about next season, and he did say, like, he said the line, you know, make sure we get a stronger squad. He mentioned the players that are off contract. He mentioned the necessity of the club looking at players in the offseason. Like, this was the first time it actually felt like he was kind of putting the onus on the club to, like, I need help here. And there'll be some Adelaide fans out there who say, like, oh, like, you know, yes, but don't deflect. Like, you need to do better. But it's like, listen, he fucking does need help. Like, this squad is all over the place. There's too many midfielders. The signings that they made in January, like, Yayo the Cooley you bring in, it seems like he's not fit enough. Like, we haven't seen him yet, right? The only one, Austin Ayoubi, who, this is where Carl can come in for criticism, is I don't really understand why he was taken off at halftime. I asked him actually afterwards in the press conference, and he said basically him and Van der Sar weren't direct enough, maybe he's talking about the forward runs and stuff. Like, I don't know. I thought watching the game, like, it was more that Adelaide were too passive on the ball. There were actually opportunities where they could have gone forward and they didn't. But, you know, like, the Tunnicliffe signing, like, Jesus, if that was the biggest anti-indictment the biggest indictment of that signing on Saturday, then I don't know what is. Like, he was awful on Saturday, right? In transition, Adelaide were in sixes and sevens. I asked Carl this afterwards where, you know, you look at Sydney when they press, for example, and we'll talk about them later too, and they weren't really able to yesterday because of a red card, but, like, in the derby, for example, last week, Sydney FC, when they press, like, they press together and everything's connected, they are so compact as a unit. Adelaide United, there seems to be this general notion of let's go press, but their back four aren't squeezing together. Victory were like, awesome, we got all this space between the lines, let's just go and kill you right from there. And, you know, I think there's been two numbers for the XG for Victory in this game, so I'm not too sure which one was which. The A-League Men XG Twitter had 3.39. Then I went on another site called Footy Stats, and they had 2.18. I don't know which one's which, but either way, like, if you're conceding over 2 XG at home, like, Jesus. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Adelaide, at this point, the end of the season, like, I was saying this to someone on Saturday. I said, like, you know, you can't defend as it is. You don't, at this point, like, they don't even have the personnel, right, to do so. Like, we've been saying Ryan Kiddo, you know, all season, like, he's just not left back. He's just not good enough there. Like, he's going to get torched every week. They concede a lot of their goals from that side. But, I mean, it's not like Javi Lopez looked much better, right? Like, you know, Victory actually did get in behind quite a few times down the right. Like, they just don't have the personnel to keep clean sheets, it seems. So, at this point, like, just go more gung-ho and just try and win games 3-2, 4-3. Like, see where you can go from there, right? Because the season's over. The season's over for them. On the Victory side of things, much better performance from them, definitely in comparison to their performance in Brisbane. Like, they... Look, Adelaide played into their hands because, you know, it's like Kyle said it afterwards about, you know, Victory likes to play a lot of long balls. They like to be direct and you know, Adelaide just don't have the ability to defend, basically, any sort of forward runs or directness from another team, it just seems at the moment. So, what I would say with Victory is this, where... Great, Fornaroli obviously got back amongst the goals. That's good for them. You could see... when he celebrated the penalty that he was kind of, you know, he was pretty happy that he's kind of found his groove again. But this, despite all their dominance, like, this could have still easily been 2-2. Bovolin had a late chance from a header, which Izzo had to save. And, like, Victory know, Popovich knows, it's Adelaide away, it's always going to be tough. I get that. But, man, if you want me to take you seriously, if you want me to put you in the Wellington Mariners bracket of, yeah, these are the contenders, like, the ones everyone should be taking seriously, like, you have to put teams away. Like, that game should have been 4-1. Like, game over, let's go home, right? So, something to watch with Victor. I mean, it's been a problem for really the last two seasons, last year as well. Like, you could make the argument that last year, because they didn't have Bruno, well, only to the end of the season, they didn't have someone who was able to kind of prop up their awful finishing. And this year, they kind of do. And if you take away Bruno's goals, you know, is that team a top six team, right? Like, it's defensively, they're great. Don't get me wrong. But the chance creation is just every week. It's like, oh my God, can you just kind of put your opposition to the sword? Because if they do, like, you know, Popovich just said it, they're right. Like, defensively, they're a fantastic team. They've got two really good central defenders, and they don't really give away a lot of chances, but they have to be more clinical. It's really the thing to look at with them for the rest of the season. All right. Now, Perth-Newcastle, I wasn't able to watch this game. I watched the extended highlights back, and, yeah, like, I also watched the press conferences, as I do for every game, and... another two-all draw. I think it's a fifth straight two-all draw between these two teams, which is just fucking mental as well. Graham Arnold was there, probably watching, definitely watching Adam Taggart, you'd think, and probably watching Apostolos Stamatopoulos as well, or IP, or Stammer, as I might start calling him. Quickly on Taggart, got the double in this game. First goal was brilliant for me, the way he took that inside the box. His poaching instincts... like, they've always been great. We always know that, even going back to his Jets days. But, like, his ability to... I think I saw someone... I think it was Petr Petrov. He's a great tactics guy and makes a lot of great observations on his Twitter about the A-League and stuff. And he mentioned it too. Like, Taggart's ability to create separation but to the defender, but particularly to just create space in the box when there really isn't much to work in, and finish at such a high level is such an asset. And that could be... you think of Socceroos at the moment, you think of when they play against low blocks, which they're, you know, going to face probably against Lebanon too, in this upcoming qualifier. Like, having a nine who can just create that yard of space in the area is just so huge. So, you know, I would be... I'd probably take him in the squad. Like, I don't know. There's other options out there. You know, obviously, if we look at the Asian Cup, we had Duke, Yangi, and Fornaroli. Like, Fornaroli would probably say... you could say, well, Fornaroli, you know, that was his first two goals since he returned from the Asian Cup. Has he done enough to keep his spot? But, like, I don't know. Yeah, probably. You know, like, I don't know. I haven't sat down and had a look at all the strikers. But Taggart, it just feels like he really should get a call. I mean, he has been fucking fantastic this year. I've said it, like, every single time I've been on a podcast because... like, you really have to watch him, you know. He's just superb what he does for that team. And I think Stad just talked about it after game too. Like, his leadership too is another element which helps him big time as well. Now, also with him, I'll mention too, like, don't forget, this is a guy who started against Spain, from memory, in 2014, 10 years ago at the World Cup, which is kind of mental when you think about, like, wow, he was that young when he went to the World Cup. So, you know, he's had that experience at that level. So, you know, I think he won't be fazed either if he was there being reintroduced to the Socceroos squad. Couple things on Newcastle first, and then I'll talk about the security stuff with the shed as well. Rob Stanton was not happy at full time. Now, if you listen to Rob Stanton during the season and his press conferences, I think he's actually a great coach for what they have at the moment at Newcastle and their situation. I think he's seems to be a very patient guy. I'll talk about in the moment how he wasn't patient, though, maybe on the weekend. He does seem to be very kind of understanding of, look, we don't have an owner. You know, we've got a young team. It's kind of, they're going to be ups and downs. It is what it is. And he says, like, he's been saying all season about, like, you know, the young players, this can happen when they blow leads, for example. And I think it's James Gardner for the Newcastle Herald. I think I saw him say something like, if Newcastle basically didn't, the amount of goals they've conceded in the last 10 minutes of games, if they hadn't, they'd be something like 6th or 5th. Like, it's crazy like that, right? But I still think they've had a decent season for what they've got, to be honest with you, on paper. And I like some of their pieces as well, too. But, you know, when you dominate a game like they did for that first 60 minutes, like, I watched the extended highlights back, and there was like a chance every minute. Like, they were killing Perth in that game, right? And you go 2-0 up and you're in total control like that. Like, at some point, like, I agree with Stanton afterwards, at some point the players do have to take an onus with the protecting of leads, right? So he kind of came out and he was really frustrated. He said, like, you know, I'll look at myself. And he does say this, like, most weeks. He says, I need to look at my process. But this was the first time where he kind of said, like, the players need to take ownership for this too, right? Because like, there's no way they should have blown that game. You know, when you actually have a look at the amount of chances, they probably should have won that 3-4-0. They were so in control, right? Good for Clayton Taylor to get back on the score sheet too. And yeah, Newcastle, they just can't see our games. Like, it's like every set piece that goes in the box when they're like 2-0 up late on or 1-0 up late on, you just think like holy fuck, they're going to concede a chance. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, they need to be more resilient, right? And I think Stanton's probably looking at it and thinking the early part of the season, they're a young team, that's going to come later in the season. I think now he's thinking, like, what the hell? This isn't happening. Like, we need to be able to see out these results. These players need to learn, and that's probably what he's getting worried about. So, yeah, you know, massive bottle job, really, by Newcastle there against Perth. Last thing, on the shed. Now, I'm not going to talk about this stuff too much. In terms of the security stuff, this has all been covered on all sorts of other platforms in the last couple of weeks. Of course, what we saw last round with the derby and also the Brisbane victory game. But, you know, we saw the security, we saw heavy-handed, you know, work by members of security kicking out young boys and stuff again. I'm just going to say this. Perth night games this season have literally been one of the highlights of the season. Like, if you have been able, if I know probably people across the ditch and people in the East Coast, it's a bit harder to stay up. But, and even where I am, to be honest, they are late. They're like 9:30. But, you know, the atmosphere that the shed have built throughout the season behind the goal has honestly been fucking unbelievable. Like, there have been games when they beat Brisbane 3-2, that was unbelievable. And also because Zakovic came back, there was a lot of narratives around that. When they beat Melbourne City, I think 4-2, Joel Anasmo scored the kind of ceiling goal. Like, that was just insane. You know, like, the atmosphere they've been able to cultivate behind that goal without having an owner for most of the season, let's not forget, it's been absolutely fantastic. So if what I saw on Saturday leads to less numbers at home games for Perth Glory towards the end of the season, like, it's going to be extremely disappointing. Extremely disappointing. So please, please do not try and ruin a good thing, because, like, they're just young lads in there who are just absolutely loving it every week. And the players love it too. You can see, like, they're scoring goals that end, going in the crowd. Like, it's fantastic, right? So, and also, like, if you haven't already, like, make sure you're watching Perth night games. They're fucking awesome. So, yeah. All right. Last couple games. Let's move on to Sunday. first thing, I had, so with my computer, I'm able to do a, split screen when we have these just mind-bogglingly stupid simultaneous kickoffs on a Sunday. Both games at 4:30 where I am. And firstly, so I watched MacArthur Mariners until basically that became a non-event, and then I switched over and kind of, not switched over, I just put the audio on for Sydney Brisbane. But we'll start with MacArthur Mariners. Just wow. Like, this Mariners team, I'll say this now, this is the most complete team in the league, complete top to bottom. Because Wellington, if we look at Wellington, they still have that, they're prone to a performance like they showed against Melbourne City. If you look at a team like MacArthur, you know, they're prone to basically the young players not turning up, like Rafa, like Bernardo, like we saw yesterday. And then it's kind of the, let's give the ball to Ulysses Devia and hope he can do the best show, you know what I mean? So, and then you look at Sydney, who I kind of have in that, they could, they're almost a contender for me. And yesterday doesn't really change that too much for me, as I'll talk to in a moment. Sydney still are susceptible to kind of getting caught out in transition. If their press isn't where it needs to be, they can get caught with their high line. So they're still not totally complete. You look at the Mariners. All phases of the game, this team is like as good as it can be right now. They are so locked in. And this game yesterday, where they basically just come out and just rip MacArthur apart in the first 20 minutes, and then it's just a case of like MacArthur's spirit is just taken from them, right? But this performance here reminded me very much of when they actually came to Adelaide early in the season, and Torres, like, they just completely dismantled Adelaide at Hindmarsh. They were 3-0 up at halftime in that game and then got a late one in the second half. Similar to this one, 2-0 up at halftime and got a third one in the second half. And their ability to, we've seen them go to Newcastle, win 1-0, go to victory, win 1-0. When they went to MacArthur in the AFC Cup, they weren't at their best. They found a way to win. So they've been able to show that they can find a way to win. And then they have been able to show that, like, we can be the Mariners of last year and just come out and basically beat the shit out of you, right? So, you know, and they're doing it. They're actually doing it in other team stadiums. Like, this is the other thing, right? Like, it's not that they're, like, just going there and... It's not like yesterday was a 3-0, but, oh, you know, if MacArthur had done, you know, maybe MacArthur had a couple of chances at nil, or it's like, no. Like, it was 3-0, and like, it was 3-0, and it could have been 4 or 5. Like, they are taking the soul of teams, right? And then also is the other part is like the squad management with the minutes and being able to compete on both fronts has been fantastic. They're obviously going to, well, I'd be shocked if they didn't get through against Adisha in that second leg. I think they play a team from Kyrgyzstan, something like that, if I'm not mistaken, in the next round. Like, man, they got a chance to win that competition. They got a chance to win the double this season, the treble, if you think about the Premiership, the Championship, and then the AFC Cup. Like, it's unbelievable what they're doing. Just unbelievable. And, you know, the recruitment, if I could just do a quick tangent on this, my advice to anyone listening right now, anyone who doesn't follow the Mariners, whenever the Mariners make a foreign signing, just assume that they're going to be good. Edmondson got his first goal yesterday in the league. Unbelievable finish. Great transition. Docker, who has been probably their best player in recent weeks, maybe Nisbet, like it's close between those two. But like, Docker started a little bit slowly, now he's coming to his own. Torres started a little bit slowly. We know how I feel about Angel Torres. He's one of the best players in the league. He's fucking awesome, right? Barcelos, who they've brought in as this guy who can operate in the half space of this number 10, who didn't start the best. Well, he just had these cameos off the bench, and now he's kind of been embedded, and he's got a bit of a temper like Torres, to be honest, too, which I kind of like, though. I feel like you kind of need that a little bit. And he's brilliant. I mean, the way he took that goal yesterday was fantastic as well. Like, never, ever doubt a signing that they make at this point. Seriously. And, you know, now they've got options too. Nisbet has, you know, come into his own in that number 10 role. Nisbet is one of the best players in the league. He's just fucking awesome. And then Ballard is probably one of the most underrated players in the league, in my opinion. Then you've got Kaltak and Dan Hall, who's a fantastic duo. Danny Vukovic has been there and done that. We know he's going to be consistent week in, week out as well. And yeah, I mean, there's nothing but praise, really, for the Mariners right now. Last thing on them that I'll address is we saw Aussie Scout on Twitter. He's usually pretty reliable source for inside information when it comes to transfer rumors. And he mentioned that basically Josh Nisbet is being monitored by Melbourne City. Then FTBL came out and reported that Dan Hall has apparently signed a deal with Auckland for next season. I will take the Nisbet one as pretty reliable because I know Aussie Scout. FTBL, I'm not totally sure. But with Nisbet, yeah, he is off contract. Like, he's reached the point. So, like, a lot of these Mariners guys, you can say, where it's like, are we sure? Are they good in their own right, or are they good because of the system that they're being put in? Because this 3-2-5 build-up that the Mariners play in, like, no one's really worked out how to defend the box midfield. No one, like, it's the same as Wellington I just spoke about before. Every player is in a role that puts a, like, they're in a role where they can thrive. It's very simple, right? So, it's great coaching by Mark Jackson, of course. But my point is, Nisbet has reached the point where he showed that he can play multiple roles in that system as a 6 or as a 10. And I actually think he's that good now where if you took him out of that Mariners kind of, you know, system, even if you put him in Melbourne City, Melbourne Victory, whoever it is, I think he could be successful. Like, he's that good. Really, for me, I don't really want him to stay in this league, to be honest with you. I'd rather him go overseas. I think he's that good now at this point. Whereas I think someone like Dan Hall, if he goes to Auckland, I'm not saying he's just going to drop off, but I think, you know, being in that system, being in that environment, it kind of helps you become a better player. If it's not going to be as stable, maybe when you go to an Auckland, you're going to have maybe a different centre-back partner every week. Are you going to be as comfortable playing next to centre-back X as opposed to Brian Kaltak? I don't know. So, I'm not sure about that one. But it's probably a decent signing for Auckland if they're able to get that one over the line. Yeah. So, yeah, interesting things to keep an eye on. But I'll say this too. Like, everyone, and maybe the Mariners, Mariners fans did in this offseason, they panicked. You know, Cummings left, you know, then Tulio left during the season, like, oh my god, what's going on, we're losing all our players, and now look at where we are. Like, trust them, trust me, like, they've got a plan, they look long term. Barcelos, for example, now, like, he could be the Nisbet replacement right now, that we, you know what I mean. DiPizio, for example, hasn't played as much of late, but maybe they think, all right, next season he's going to be more ready, you know. So they've got contingency plans. They are brilliant in the way they operate. MacArthur, just one thing on them. Look, yesterday I think was more, look, they got beaten by a better team, number one. And I think if with Jermaine and Davia, we know that they're going to show up pretty much every week. They're great. That's what kind of sets them above, I think, some of the other teams like a Perth, like a Brisbane, right? But if the likes of Borges Rodriguez, Bernardo, Jay Coleman, if they don't turn up, then it kind of turns into a bit of Groundhog Day, right? So I think they can be a threat come finals time. I think that their starting 11 on paper can match it with anyone in the league. I've said this to a few people in the last few weeks. But yeah, if their younger players can't be consistent when it matters, then it will be a little bit of a struggle, right? But look, they're having a fine season, to be honest with you. And with all the noise that's always surrounding them off the pitch, for them to be, you know, third, fourth, potentially get a home elimination final, like, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. So not too many thoughts on them. All right, last one, Sydney and Brisbane. Again, like I said, I was watching more MacArthur Mariners in the first half. Then, kind of in the second half, I flipped over and was watching a bit more of the Sydney-Brisbane game. From what I saw in the first half, before the red card, which I'll talk about in a moment, for Jake Girdwood-Reich, it seemed like Brisbane were pretty good value and probably should have taken the lead. And I think, like, Nick Milicic at this point, like, it's him, Trent Bahadur, you could probably put a couple other players in this category of, like, listen, they're never going to become good finishers. Like, it's just, they're always going to be erratic in front of goal. Sometimes they'll score a worldie, sometimes they'll miss an easy one-on-one. Like, it's just how they are, right? But I felt, you could see Zakovic signaling on the sidelines at times too, like, the importance of Macklin Frigg being able to go basically straight to his fullbacks. Like, we got to bypass this press. Like, there's no way they're going to be able to play through it. Like, I don't think many teams can. Even a team like the Mariners, when they tried to play through the Sydney press, like, they got completely overwhelmed, right? So, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. The distances, they always get them right, Sydney. They're very well coached with their press. But I thought Brisbane did a really good job of actually bypassing it in the first half. Then we have the red card. So, the red card for Girdwood-Reich. Now, when I first saw it at the time, I actually thought, yeah, that's a red. When you have a look back, so there are degrees to this. I know that referees look at degrees to this because I actually did like ages ago, I went to like a referee workshop thing, and you kind of got an insight into how they grade things. So there's careless, there's reckless, and there's excessive force. So careless is usually just a foul, no card. Reckless, yellow, excessive force, red, right? So you have to look at that tackle. So if you're saying that's a red, you're saying that's excessive force, right? Excessive force, like, you know what I mean? So it's not excessive force. He's late and it's reckless. It's a yellow, right? His studs are high. Now, if when we're talking about challenges where studs are up, if that's becoming a different, you know what I mean? Like a different judgment, and we're not talking about that careless, reckless, excessive force that I just mentioned there, well, then that needs to be communicated. I don't think it is, right? So next season, there's going to have to be, like, I was just thinking about this before, like, I think we really just need to get like the head of referees, Nathan McGill, in a room with all 12 coaches, and it's like just the 12 coaches, literally that's it, and just be like, this is how it's going to work. Show them examples. We will call these two tackles the same. We will call these two tackles the same, right? Because I will say this, at least that one was kind of consistent in the sense that that felt very similar to like Jarrett Hendrix's against Newcastle a few weeks back. So it seems like studs to the ankle is always going to be a red at this point, right? So maybe coaches and players need to be more aware of that moving forward. But my point is more like, you know, like it killed the game, right? Now, I know, like we always say this, referees can't go out there and think about, oh, I better not kill the game, right? Like they can't. They have to judge things as it comes. But like for me, you know, you can't give that, right? And I'd say it's about Sydney. When they press, they're very aggressive. Like, they are going to be susceptible to these sort of challenges and red cards. Like, it's going to happen. Girdwood Ruck's a very, very, you know, combative defender too. But in saying that, they went down to 10. They go into this 4-3-2 shape. They're extremely compact. And when I say compact, like, when we talk about compacts with teams, we say, oh, like, from fullback to fullback, winger to winger. Like, horizontally, they're compact. But if you look at Sydney, vertically, they are extremely compact. Like, their distance from Gomez down to Matthews and Girdwood Ruck is actually really small. So that's actually that Leipzig stuff. That is that Red Bull stuff too. It's not just about pressing. It's also about being compact to control space too, right? So, you know, they were really good when they went down to 10. They got the goal with Robert Mack. Great goal. Great persistence by Jordan Courtney Perkins as well to keep the attack alive. And you could see, like, that was a huge goal. Like, and you could see Talay and Zirilla on the sidelines. Like, they knew, like, holy shit, if we can keep on to this when basically we've been killed by a red card and win this 1-0, that's going to be massive. Throw away the lead straight away. Great goal by Henry Hoare. Just kind of ghosted in completely unmarked. I think Talay will be pretty annoyed with that. And then Brisbane, you know, it's a big missed opportunity. Like, they were kind of, not all over them, but they had some moments in the last 20. There was a header by, I don't know who had the initial header, but then it fell for Yuma Jock in the box and he kind of smashed it over. Like, there were some chances there. And this could be like one of those ones you look back on if you finish 7th or 8th and be like, oh shit, like, you know, if we had actually got the winner there, could have been really different. So, look, big missed opportunity for them. Yeah, now, back to the red card and stuff. After the game, Talay speaking to, I think it was Tristan McManus on the sideline. And yeah, he kind of said, you know, this always seems to happen basically when, he didn't say Adam Kersey's name, which is good that he's not name dropping referees. I think Cody Jade has been on the podcast before. He said that. I agree. I don't think it's respectful to name drop referees. Look at you, Marco Rudin. But he kind of suggested that, you know, we always seem to go down 10 when Kersey's refereeing. And let's not forget, and I actually just found this before I started recording, Kersey was the same guy who actually sent off Pat Wood in the Australia Cup, the Australia Day clash against Melbourne Victory for that ridiculous red card. So, which brings me to the MRP and the match review panel, who are probably going to maybe look at this, I don't know. But the role of the MRP is starting to become a little bit ridiculous, to be honest with you, the match review panel, because someone like Adam Kersey, like, these are now multiple incidents. Like, he needs to now be accountable for his performances, right? And I will say this, just one thing about referees. All the A-League referees care about their role. They are doing everything they can. You know, we've seen, like in years past, like Alex King, they've done like a little video where they follow the referee around the game. Like, these guys care. Like, let's not act like they're just turning up and doing whatever they want. But hang on a minute, there's got to be accountability. And the MRP, it's highly doubtful that red card's going to be overturned. Definitely not. I'd be shocked. And nothing gets overturned. Like, it's like, it's, it feels like the MRP is basically just becoming more about protecting referees as opposed to holding them to account. And I know I'm talking about it without, you know, the MRP giving their verdicts yet this week, but that's where I think there's also another problem where referees just aren't being held accountable in the A-League at the moment, you know? It's very rare decisions that are being made are being overturned, not just when it comes to VAR during the game, but I'm also talking about, like, post-mortem when we're talking about, you know, a player's suspension being rescinded, for example. So, you know, I know why the MRP wants to protect referees. They want to back their decisions. I get it. But you've also got to be independent, right? You can't always put your shoulder around a referee and be like, hey, you know, you just got that one wrong. Or actually, no, you were right, even though everyone can see it's clearly wrong. Like, there has to be more sort of, actually, you know what? No, referee got that wrong. Let's overturn it. And rescind the suspension. So they won't. I'd be shocked. Goto Ryk will be suspended. Lacerda will come in for the next game for Sydney, you'd imagine. So yeah, very frustrating. Very frustrating, some of the stuff with the refereeing at the moment. We will have actually a piece coming out very soon on Front Page Football about VAR actually. And an element of VAR, so keep an eye out for that. And actually, I will finish the podcast by just plugging some stuff in terms of the website. So frontpagefootball.net, make sure you are watching it, because yeah, we're hoping to, you know, definitely amp up our coverage and our content heading into the final stretch of the A-League season. But obviously the NPL is up and running across the country at the moment too. Antonis Pagonis had a great interview with Chrissy Panagaris recently of Adelaide United. She spoke about a journey to the A-League woman and her first goal, so you can go check that out. Any MPLSA listeners out there who are listening to some A-League content on here, winners and losers will be out for this week, you know, very soon as well. We had an interesting round in the MPLSA where all the games had to be moved because of heat. We had a game be delayed because a sprinkler went on during it. You know, just peak MPL stuff, basically. So keep an eye out for that. And social media. Make sure you're following us. Twitter. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Threads. And obviously we're on here, like on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. So yeah, leave us some feedback. Let me know what you think about the new format. If you got anything Wednesday, I'm probably going to be back again recording. Probably talk about that Wanderers City game that's on tomorrow night. That's going to be really interesting, really interesting six-pointer for the finals. So I'll make some judgments there, and I'll talk about it probably on Wednesday's pod. But anything that you want me to talk about, any interesting topics that you want my opinion on, any questions that you have, then let me know. I'm happy to do like some sort of, you know, listener questions or anything like that on these podcasts. Might have a guest on Wednesday too. I'll see how we go. But that's been the Front Page Football Podcast. We are back. I am very excited. We're back. It's a different format. It's all very, very exciting. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And let me know as well any segments that you want to see, anything like that. I'm happy to oblige and shake it up a little bit. But yeah, Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, we're hoping to do 3 a week. This Monday pod is probably going to be a review of the A-League action, and then Wednesday and Friday will be, you know, maybe something a bit different. Depends what's going on, really. Depends what's going on, right? So yeah, that's been another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Until next time, I am your host, Christian Marchetti. And it is bye for now.